Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. We're live tonight. This is January the 20th, 2012. I've been saying that every time so you'll know it's not an archive show. Okay, and guess what? Julia is back.
Oh, I get announced today.
Yeah. Well, we announced you last week, too. Because those of you who were listening last week, we told you about we have an office now in England. And she was over there trying to get everything straightened out and up and running. And we have people working for us over there. So she was in England last week. And so she just got back, only been back a couple of days, and I don't even think she's over jet lag yet.
We'll see.
Mountains of work piled up, so she's trying to catch up on all of that. But she is back, so she's going to be telling about some exciting thing that happened to her over there. But if you have any call-ins, just go ahead and do it, because the last several weeks we've been having some really good callers with interesting questions. And I think that's important because it gives us something different, a different direction to go in and something else to talk about that we hadn't thought about. I'll give you the toll-free number if you want to call in. 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008 if you want to call in and talk tonight.
Well, and I know last week there were like two calls holding when we started our announcements, and they were trying to flash us that there were calls there waiting because we were on Skype or we could see them.
Oh.
And we apologize. We weren't able to take your calls at that time. We really needed to announce the schedule and what was happening, and we knew if we had another call, we wouldn't have time to do that. So we apologize for not getting to you. There was someone from Arizona, and I can't remember where the other one was from, but anyway, there were two callers holding. Yeah, so we had two that we didn't get to last week.
So on your end, you could identify those.
Mm-hmm.
Here, all I have is a telephone.
That's what would happen if you use Skype. You
well,
can see things going on the computer.
They so. Said we could use it.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I wanted to tell you, that we have our studio that we built here on the property. Oh, there's somebody already. Mm-hmm. And we are already utilizing it. We are doing shows by Skype, video, and some of these are probably going to end up on YouTube because
right.
a lot of people, in fact, I've been doing Skype in the Philippines and Norway just in the last week alone. So some of these you're probably going to see on YouTube that they will probably post.
Right.
Okay, who's there? We got a caller.
This is Miguel Palacios calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, okay. You have a question?
It's a real pleasure to talk to you. I think I've listened to every single video that you have on YouTube and all your interviews, and I'm into the books right now. And I was wondering if you have your books in Spanish.
Yeah, not all of them, but there are a few of them in Spanish. The ones we have are the Jesus books. Jesus and the Essenes, and they walk with Jesus, and some of the Nick Nostradamus, book one, I think book one and two are in Spanish.
Between
the last we heard, they were putting
okay.
that in Spanish. I don't know,
right.
Between Death and Life, I don't know if that ever came out or not. But we have a publisher who is in Barcelona, and they have been translating them into Spanish.
So the thing is, you have to connect with that publisher. They're not over here.
Yeah,
we had a few of the books
every
file, but
all the friends that I talked to, Spanish speakers that they don't speak English, they don't know anything about you.
Ah.
They don't know anything about your books. How would you call the convoluted universe in Spanish? I have no idea.
Strange and weird.
Yeah. I have no idea how they would translate that word, convoluted. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, that's a mystery to me, too. Yeah, I live in the United States for the last 23 years. I'm originally from Peru. I understand you've been in Peru, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, I've been to Machu Picchu.
Machu Picchu, there you go.
Yeah, and I've been,
okay,
we had to go into Lima,
that.
So I've been there. But mostly with Machu Picchu was the only thing I've done in Peru.
I hope you did enjoy Machu Picchu and the food also.
Say that again?
On the what?
The food?
I hope you enjoy the food in Lima.
Did you enjoy the food as well as the Machu Picchu?
Yeah.
If you remember it.
Yeah. Well, try to remember. It's been a while ago, and I go so many places. I know
you probably have so many interesting things to talk about. I'm going to go straight to the question. I've been reading Nostradamus, actually Nostradamus 2, and I know from your latest videos that you have on YouTube that you don't like to talk about much about Nostradamus books because everything is changing now. And
yes.
Nostradamus actually pictured the worst-case scenario, right?
Yes.
But there was something that really caught my attention, and I thought I wanted to mention this to you. In Nostradamus 2, you work with this gentleman called John.
Yes.
And you took John to the future, actually. And
yes, he did. He
happened,
popped up in his next life, I guess it would be.
That's right. And if the scenario is in year 2087.
Okay, I didn't remember the year, but it was far in the future.
Yeah, and he mentioned at one point because you asked him about the what happened to the world, and he mentioned that they don't like to talk about the old world. They have a one world government that started on 239 on year 2039. And this is what actually caught really my attention. It says 2039 was 10 years after the shift.
After the shift, okay.
Talking about
how
the phase shift.
10 years.
10 years after the shift. Okay, because, see, I wrote it a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I can't remember all the details, but I know we had a lot of changes, and the whole world had changed by the time he saw it in the future. Because he was a woman astronaut at that time, and they were going to another planet on some kind of a mission where they were all going to be working together with the aliens on another planet. Yeah, it was an interesting story.
That's right. But you pretty much were very specific with the date. We're talking about a phase shift in year 2029.
Uh-huh.
But again, going by your latest videos, we should discard that because we're living actually a different reality right now. Is that true?
Well, you know, time, dates are the hardest thing to put on any prediction. That was why we didn't go along so much with the dates that Nostradamus gave us. But in that case, he was going forward to his own future life. And if the timeline, the dates are the same, he was saying what they knew from their own history. So who's to say? Mm-hmm. But what I've found, that's why I don't do much lecturing on the Nostradamus anymore, is because things have changed. You know, when he told
to
do that assignment, he said that the time was very close and this was what we had to do. But he said the job he gave me was that you must change the future. He was giving us the worst-case scenario, what would happen if nobody did anything. And said, if I show you the most horrible things man can do to each other, will you do something to change it? That's why for 25 years I lectured all over the world about the prophecies, telling people the power of their mind, how they could change it by focusing on the opposite of what he saw. And that's why, to me, I think we did that. I think we turned the corner and went down another timeline, though things are not going to be as bad as he predicted them. So
everything thanks to you, people like you and the three waves of volunteers too, right? That make a lot of difference.
All of that has made a big difference. So fascinating story, but I'm not going to depend so much on the dates anymore and what he saw. Some of the things are still coming true.
Well, that's what I noticed when I read it. It was more like events. You look at events and you can tell where things are, where you are in the line of events. And then you can also tell that we have ported it to some degree. You know, it's not to the severity that he was seeing. So it has changed, but you can still tell by the lineup of events roughly where we are. So, because I kept thinking, oh, it's yet to come, and this was in 2001. I was saying all that stuff was yet to come, and I realized, no, we're actually in the middle of it, you know, so by the lineup of events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all happening now. And that's what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
It'll come back anyway. But
I still got a lot to read. I just ordered your Convoluted Universe number 4.
Did you read all the other three?
Actually, no. I was browsing through number 1, and I jumped all the way to 4
because I don't want to wait.
I just
can't
wait.
Each one of the convoluted books gets more and more complicated, and a lot of people like to start out where they're a little easier, and then they can, you know, it doesn't stretch your mind quite so much that way.
Being from a country like Peru, being from a country like Peru, I've seen a lot of strange things too. I mean, just to give you a little example, a lady 30 years ago told me what I was going to be doing now, and everything is happening actually, like she said.
Oh,
so
it's interesting that you remember what she told you.
Yeah, because I always thought it can't happen like that. I mean, it can't be that easy. But I mean, not to the detail, but you know, the most important parts I still remember. Yeah,
because you know,
in your
we
convoluted
have...
number 4. Yes, in your convoluted number 4, you mentioned Michael, the guy with HIV.
Yes.
Yes, working in a class with him. And you took him to a past life, and it was a woman in the Old West, looks like, right?
Yeah, it was not a very pleasant life because he got murdered in it.
That's right. It was horrible, yeah. And it was she was selling herself for money in order to bring food to the table, and the husband killed him. What surprised me is that in the next life, is his father.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the husband is her father. I kept thinking, what, this guy who was her husband, my gosh, didn't he think, where's the food coming from? He seemed like he was a little tense.
Yeah.
Or he just didn't want to know until he was confronted with it.
Yeah,
he had to deal with it. So.
Probably just not looking as long as he was getting food.
But the strange thing to me is that he killed his wife. And in the next life, he get to give life to this kid.
Exactly.
And then wasn't he supposed to stay with the kid, you know, and provide for the kid in order to pay for what he did in the previous life?
No, he just had to. He just had to help bring him back in.
Because
just give him life, because he took it away before, so he just had to bring it back in.
Because after Michael was born, his father deserted him and his mother, so he didn't see him again until, the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, but that was all his reason was supposed to be, was just to bring him back in. Just that was it. You know, he really didn't
have to hang around, I guess.
Apparently not. That was the contract, I guess, was just to give him back in.
So if you read more of my books, you'll see that they're really strange the way the karma works. And the contracts
come
back to pay.
It's not as simple as you do something bad. It's not as simple as you do something bad in this life and then you pay it in the next one. It's not that simple, right?
No, because you don't know what you don't know what the whole soul plan is. You know, it may look like, it should be this way from this angle, but we don't have the bigger picture. We don't know the whole plan. And that's why it's better not to try and make those decisions.
Yeah, if you read more of my books, you'll see a lot of these that are very strange how they do come back, because you have to pay it back. That's the law, karma. What goes around comes around. But when they come back in, a lot of times it can be really different roles that they're playing.
Well, and you don't know where they are in the whole payback cycle. So It may, like I said, it may look like one thing, but it's not that. That's why you, it's really best not to be in a judgment place. We have no ability to judge whatsoever.
Yeah, what we think is bad happening to somebody is always happening for a reason.
Absolutely.
And that's why once you understand the, you know, the rules and the laws of reincarnation, it all makes a lot of sense. And I'm still finding
strange
cases. I'll keep
reading and I'll keep learning.
Mm-hmm. Well, keep on learning.
Oh yeah.
Thank you very much, ladies, for everything that you're doing. And I wish I can. I hope I can see you in Spanish sometime, so I can share this with some friends in Peru. I'm dying to take all your books and share them in my country or in other countries in South America. Thank you very much, and I'm going to leave the line for other callers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And we'll see if we can get those a little bit more accessible over here. We'll see what we can do about bringing them actually over here. So, but thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay. Now, I was talking about, you know, we did build the studio, and we have started doing the filming.
Mm-hmm.
We've got it all set up now, and it. But a lot of it is funny that we are doing them now from other countries.
Right.
And it's Skype is wonderful.
Well, that's how the world gets so small. As that's one of the reasons we're starting the online, different programs online. It's because that's a way of reaching out to these other countries in a much more efficient way. You know, you can do it by Skype.
I remember, years and years and years ago, they was always joking about someday we were going to have a telephone where we would be able to see the people we were talking to. And we all said, yeah, when's that going to happen? But we said, if it ever did happen, you better make sure you're dressed when you go and answer the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's happened now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also remember, I think it was in the 80s, you were reading an article, and they said by some date every home would have two computers.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, my goodness, that's ridiculous. How can we have two computers? But yes, I mean, they do.
Because it was the middle of the 80s when I got my first computer, and it was those old MS-DOS, which you couldn't trust, and the dot matrix printers, you know.
A lot of changes.
But for me, it was a big advancement because my first five books were written on a typewriter. And when we got the first computer, it was, oh, my goodness, I don't have to keep hitting the carriage return. I can just keep typing, and you make a mistake. You don't have to type the whole page over again.
Oh.
So that was a big advancement. And so all of that it really caused a big change. So my next books, I started writing them on the computer. But I did never trust it. Because a lot of times I'd push the save button. I'd go out of the room with my fingers crossed. I couldn't stand to be in the same room with it just to make sure, is it going to save it or is it going to eat it? Because many times I figured it would just disappear and my words are floating around out in space somewhere. So that's why every time I would type anything, a chapter or anything, I would immediately put it into hard copy on paper because I didn't want to take the chance. Then if nothing else, you'd have to type the whole thing over again, but at least you wouldn't lose it. Well, now they have the scanning. You can do it. I had a lot of writer friends back in those days. One was a famous Western writer, and he was so upset because he lost whole chapters. And he kept saying, well, it's in the computer. But I never trusted it, so I always put it on paper.
Don't. She still doesn't, okay?
Well, the computer can do things it's not supposed to do. But now it's better. It's a whole lot better. But that's been, 30 years now?
Right.
And they keep changing, and everything is changing about the computer. And now with the Skype, I don't like that little bitty pinhole camera that's on there. That camera makes it look like fisheye lens. So we have a little other camera, don't we, that we clip on the top?
Right.
And that helps us to get much better picture.
Right.
So it is amazing how these things are happening now. And now they just call in and it goes everywhere. I never know where it's going.
Yeah.
So people keep saying they see me on the internet, they see a lot on YouTube, and they see me on all kinds of things that I had no idea I was even on. It's like anybody now, I think, who has any kind of film of me is putting it on there somewhere.
That's fine.
Yeah, people keep saying, we want more. And I said, well, somebody out there is doing
and
it.
And we're working on it, too. We're working on more.
Yeah, to get it out there because of the filming. Well, we filmed a lot of my lectures now,
right.
And we have all of that. Of course, we sell those, a lot of them, on CDs for people who
DVDs,
want copies of the DVDs, copies of the lectures. But it's just like, you know, the world is extremely small. It just keeps getting smaller and smaller. But that was interesting he brought that up about Michael, because that was a very amazing case.
Yeah.
With the AIDS, HIV and the AIDS, and he had a very dramatic, well, I won't say it's a cure, but it is almost a cure that he had right after that, during the session, because that's what we do. We try to help people. And let's see, I don't know, I was going to bring that up later anyway. I guess it wouldn't hurt to bring it up now, because I never know what we're going to talk about. I managed to get it in a convoluted form, even though it had just happened a few months before the book was finished. And Michael, I don't think he would care if we talked about it, because he allowed us to use his real first name, and I usually don't do that. But he was worried about doing the demonstration. See, every time I do a class, we have a demonstration, and we just pick somebody. And I always depend on them, you know who I mean by them, the ones I work with, to help me to know which one am I supposed to do, because a lot of people want to be the demos, and I can't do private sessions when I'm doing all of this, because there's not enough time. But he was helping us with the class, and he told us he had HIV, and he would like help on it. He was taking different drugs for it. But the only thing he was worried about was judgment. He said, if I get up there and tell everybody that I've got HIV, they're all going to judge me. They're going to look down on me. He's a really fine person, but he has this feeling of, you know, I guess a lot of people do, what are people going to think of me? So he said, but it's the only way I'm going to get a session, I'll agree to it. But he was really worried about doing it. Now, see, what did he say? He said the doctors checked the T cell count.
Right.
And it has to be, I think we found over 200 to 400 is normal.
Well, I think it was higher than that. It's like 400 to, anyway, it's up there, yeah. It's like 400 to, and I could be wrong, too. I'm trying to remember the numbers.
Well, I put it in the book, because I did the research at that time. But the T cells have to do with the body's defense system on fighting off diseases. And they said that's what the problem is when you get HIV and AIDS. It's not the virus itself. It's that it weakens the defense system to where you can come down with all kinds of things.
If you have no defense.
Yeah.
So it's something else that's going to come in, and usually it's pneumonia. That people, they're just very susceptible to pneumonia.
Because the body can no longer fight off anything.
Right. And that would be your first line. See, that's why the lungs.
The breathing.
Right. It's just right there, because that's one of your first things that come in.
So that's the T cells is one of the ways they can tell your body's defense system. Well, his, he said, had tanked. It was really, really low. It was at the point that he really virtually had no defense system at all, and he could have got anything. So they had him on different drugs that are trying to increase the T-cell count. Well, that was what the main reason he wanted to do the session. And then, like the young man said just now, that the past life he went into was quite amazing, because he was killed in that other life, and it all had to do with judgment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the husband was judging her for selling her body to get food, and he ended up murdering her. And it was all about judgment. And then in this life, it comes back that the one who murdered her was his father in this lifetime. But it explained a lot of the judgment. But when we got to the subconscious part, and if you know my work, you know when we get to the subconscious part is when we get the real answers. We came up with something that was so outstanding. It may not sound like it to some other people, but it was almost groundbreaking. And the class, you could feel it. The energy in that room shifted dramatically, like we have really made a breakthrough. We've made a discovery here. Because what it was, if I can explain it, it's explained in the book much more carefully, is that, you know, everybody comes in with a plan. Everybody comes in to do something. Now, a lot of people, you come in to learn things when you come into a life. That's the main thing, you know, learn lessons. What do I have to do, learn next? You're going to school, you're learning lessons. But then we found out, suppose there were souls who have already gone through a lot of lessons. They're very, very advanced. And they're still going to school and taking lessons, but they are giving the harder ones. So they said there was a whole group, and this would have been about in the 80s, whenever the AIDS epidemic began. The whole group had volunteered to come into the world at this time to teach. And what they were teaching was non-judgment. And that is amazing. I mean, when we got that, we said, oh my gosh, that is so important. They come to teach the other people, because look what was happening in the 80s. People thought you just had to be around somebody with AIDS and you were going to catch it. There was just a great fear there because it happened so quickly. There was fear, there was a lot of, prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very bad time. I had if you remember in my book, The Nostradamus, the John he was speaking of in Volume 2 died of AIDS. So I was very close to that whole thing. He was only 36 years old when he died of AIDS. So that was during the height of the AIDS epidemic in the 80s. But what we found out in that session was these people took it as part of their plan to come in to have this disease to teach other people. That is amazing. And that was what I put it in there. It's a whole chapter on that, is that, like, look at what they have volunteered to do.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them gave up their whole life even to try to teach this to other people. And now, you know, the stigma is not there as much anymore. And that was what I told Michael. I said, you don't have to worry about the class. We had a big class, too. It was 60, 70 people, I think. It was a big one. And I said, you don't have to worry about what they're going to think. I said, there is not the stigma that there used to be. You can see how far we've come since the 80s. People are becoming more tolerant. Of course, there's a lot of them out there that still aren't. But more are becoming more tolerant. And there isn't the stigma involved in the AIDS and the HIV as there used to be. So we've come a long way. And I told Michael, besides, all these other people have got their own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's got their own junk, their own stuff that they're dealing with. So they're not going to judge you. But he was still nervous about doing the session. But whenever that, after it was over with, when we discussed that with the class, it was like, oh my gosh, that's what it's all about. And that's groundbreaking.
Right.
To think these people, they don't know it consciously, but they made a contract to come in as a group to help change the belief system of the world, really. And I think they're doing a wonderful job with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we got slapped in the face with it, so we had to deal with it. You know, you have to face it. It had to be that way to make that effect.
I've had many cases where people have had AIDS. And we found out why. So there was always another reason, but this part never came out about that.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny, too, when Michael opened his eyes, we were coming out and he opened his eyes and was looking around, he said, "Where did all the people come from?" We thought he meant the class because some of them were sitting close enough to watch. But he said, "No, these were not people in the class. It was like other beings were in the room." And some of the other people actually said they could see beings in the room, too, that were not there before. We have a lot of strange things happen in my classes, but it's almost after he was fully awake, then he didn't see them.
Right.
But it was like a whole wave of energy went through the whole class as we were discussing this, and you said you could feel the energy of the whole place just shift.
It shifted, yeah. It was a major shift happened right then.
It's something very important happened. Well, anyway, it was after the class, I think it was a month or so later, Michael emailed me, and he had gone back to the doctor and had the tests again, and the T-cell had gone up, it was almost 200.
Yeah, what was it they said, if it goes up?
So many points in a year,
yeah,
you're doing good.
I think it was like 100 in a year, or something like that. And, no, it was like 200 in a year was great. And this had only been 4 months, and it went up 200. So
yeah, I don't think it had even been 4 months,
yeah, it
really.
It was very fast. It was moving.
After the session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they said it was amazing because it had made such a big jump. And according to the research I did, it was almost up to normal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at least he doesn't have to worry about, he does have some protection now. And I was hesitant to say it was a cure because we don't know until they say for sure that the T cell is going to stay up at that level and stay there. But I think this is going to make a difference in the drugs he's taking.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the doctors will probably say it's all based on the drugs they're giving him.
Right.
But we know different because he found the cause. He found why he had this disease develop.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very important chapter in that book when we come to this realization of what this is all about. These are things I would never have thought of.
No, that's why it was such a revelation when that happened. It was none of us had ever thought of that.
Nobody had. And there was no judgment at all. Before the demo began, he was talking about himself when I do the interview. You could feel the people really wanted him to be helped. They wanted him to be healed. And afterwards, too, they were all so excited, and there was so much love in that room.
Yeah.
There was no judgment at all. But also this shows the ones who are still prejudiced, the ones who are creating all these problems, they're creating karma for themselves.
But that's their lesson. That's their experience. That's what they're working through. So
it's always a lesson for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably what that is. But I was going to bring that out on one of these shows anyway. But this is in the convoluted four. And I said, I just got it right before I was writing that book on this last trip at a deadline trying to get it done. Okay. But we've got something we want Julia to talk about that is really groundbreaking for her, too, that happened right after the show last week.
Right.
But if you remember a few shows ago, we were talking about some pictures that I had that we also put in convoluted form. And I've been showing them all over the world at my lectures. These were pictures that this woman, there was a brother and a daughter, came and had sessions in 2006. And these pictures were taken in 2003, and they didn't know what to do with them, so they were holding on to them. So when she came to see me in 2006, she said, I feel I should give them to you. Maybe you'll know what to do with them. But when I didn't at that time know what to do with them, and we had the sessions to try to find out what they were. And in that instance, they said they were outside at night, and they saw what looked like a big star. And they were just thought, well, that's interesting. So they pointed their camera at it and just took a whole series of pictures at the star. But when the film was developed, this was in the film. It wasn't the digital. But when the film was developed, it didn't look anything like what they had pointed the camera at, which was a bright light in the sky. It morphed. It was almost like it was alive. It moved and morphed and changed shapes. And we have, I think it's 10 or 12 pictures.
Oh, no, 16.
16 pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And we reproduced them and put them in convoluted form. And I have the session there as they were trying to explain what this was. And they said, they said this is like, it's an energy. We keep talking about the energies are shifting now that we're going into the new earth. And these different energies, this was an energy that was here to help with the shifting of the earth. And it's pure love. And they said it's all over the world. And it is making changes just by being in the atmosphere. And it was a lot more in the book, but I can't remember all of it. But I said, yes, but they saw it as a star. They said that's because the human eye can't pick up what it really is. The camera picked up what it really was, but the human eye couldn't. Now, you know, the cameras are getting much faster. They're picking up a lot of things that we can't pick up. So I thought that was fascinating, and we are getting things sent to us now. Other people are getting the same thing. But with that as a basis, I want Julia to tell you what happened to her. Last week, we had her on the show. We had what I called a big party line.
Right.
I was talking to Julia and Vitaly. We're in our new office in England. And Stephanie was at her house, mm-hmm. which was a little ways away. We had all of them on the line doing the show last week. And this is out in the middle of nowhere. It's near Stonehenge and Avebury. Mm-hmm. Glastonbury, those areas with the sacred sites.
It's out in the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell them what happened after we went off the air. Mm-hmm. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning
right.
there.
Yeah, it was just after we got off the air. And Vitaly just stepped outside just to get a breath of fresh air. And then he called me, and he's like, come look at this. Come look at this. And so I went out, and this was on the side of the house and just outside the door. And I looked at it was a star, and I was like, okay. It was sitting there twinkling, and, you know, it was a star. And I kept looking. He kept insisting there was something about it, so I looked closer, and then I noticed it was changing colors.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, wait a minute. But it's not moving, so it's not a plane. It's not. But it was a star, but it was a star that was changing colors.
Yeah.
And I'd never noticed them doing that before. So I thought, well, that's interesting. And so I went and got my camera, my digital camera, and just see if I can get pictures of it. And I was taking still shots, and when I would click the button, it would what I could see in the screen looked like the pictures in the book. And I'm like, oh, I was getting so excited. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And the
yeah, it was doing,
slowly.
Yeah, and the colors and stuff like that. It looked just like what was in the book. I thought, oh, great, I'm on to something here, you know. And then I've got, you know, the camera I have, it'll go to video. And so I flipped it over to video and was playing with that. Well, anyway, then had that. And then Vitaly intuitively got the message that we need to go out into the street, out in front of the house, and go actually, you know, get closer to it, look at it differently.
And he had his camera.
He got his video camera, and then I had my digital camera, and we went out, and just a little ways away from the house, and we're out there, and we're, you know, catching on there. Well, we both ended up filming this at the same time. My camera would
video.
Zoom. Yeah, we did video on it. My camera would zoom in at 16 times. His did 90 times. So it's really interesting to see what we got, and then one's just a little more defined. But what was very obvious when you zoom in on it is it was revolving. It was moving, you know, and stuff, and it was obvious. It was changing colors. There was points that it actually was like a flash of light would come. You know, it was something with flash on it and stuff, but it was very obviously moving. Now, on Vitaly's film, I mean, it looked so much like a craft. It's just, I mean, it's
like
obvious.
A UFO.
It looks like a UFO. And it's just amazing because, I mean, it's a star. And then while we were filming also, I started looking around at the other stars. Because I thought, well, maybe this is just, you know, this is before we could really see what we had on the screen. And I thought, well, maybe it's just an oddity. You know, maybe they're all actually like this, and we just never noticed this. So I started looking at the other stars, and the ones around it, no, they were just your typical one. You know, they weren't changing colors. And they didn't have this look. They have this look about them, and I don't think it has to do with my vision, my distance vision being blurry. I don't think it is, but it's like a ring of lights and one light in the middle, and that's the star, you know. And it's like, but that's where this was changing colors. Well, I started looking around in the sky, and I noticed another one that was doing that. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So I pointed it out to Vitaly, and then I looked and I saw another one. So there were three. And the ones around it were not doing that. So then I'm thinking, well, they're all doing that. And I looked around. No, the stars around them were not doing it. It was just these three. Then I looked at those three stars. They're perfectly in a straight line, just across the sky. I thought, uh-oh, okay, something. And this was before we were really zooming in and we knew what this, you know, what we're doing. It really wasn't until we got it back on the computer that we could really see. I mean, we could see to some degree that this was revolving and things like that. When we got on the computer, it's like, oh my gosh, this is a craft, you know. So,
you forwarded the film.
Well, afterwards, okay. So we stopped. We did like, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes of filming out there, and then we both. It was like that was enough. We went inside.
Was it still there? Or
it was
did
still
it,
there, yeah.
It didn't disappear.
No, that's what, and then we're inside. I was inside washing dishes, and I'm thinking, that's what I'm thinking. Well, what would happen? If I go back out there, at this point, something's starting to come in. I'm actually communicating, okay?
Yeah.
And I was saying.
The way you do.
Right. And I was communicating with them. I apparently tapped in pretty easily. And I said, okay, if I go back out there, will the star be there? And they said, yes. And I'm thinking, well, then what is this? Because usually crafts, they're going to be gone, you know, and you just happen to catch them. And they said, well, we're the guardians of the planet. So they're going to stay there. This is their, that's why I saw the three in a line. This is like this like stations is the feeling I got.
Like that's their station points or whatever.
Exactly. And they are here. They're guardians of the planet. What I also got was that they said, we are ready to be seen now, and as people are ready, they will see us. So they are ready to be seen, and they will be seen. So this is beginning.
But I think it goes along with the other still pictures we had. The human eye can't perceive it.
No, I mean, it was a star, and I mean, all you could see were colors.
The camera is picking up something that the human eye can't.
Well, you had to zoom it in. If we had the ability to zoom in, our eyes probably would catch it, but we don't have that zooming ability yet.
Well, so. When you put it on the computer and you forwarded it here to us, to me it looks like a craft, but it's like it's like a dome on top and a dome on the bottom, which is not the way they usually show the saucers.
Right.
With flat and then a dome on them.
Right.
It did have an edge around it.
Yeah.
But they usually show them just that edge and flat and one dome on top. This had a dome on top and a dome on the bottom, and that middle part was revolving.
Right.
The whole thing was revolving and changing colors.
The whole thing was revolving, and then do you notice once in a while it would flash. It would flash a bright light, too. So.
And like you said, we got 3 or 4 minutes, and the two cameras, the one is just magnifying it more than the other.
Right, about 5 times more.
And
4 times more, I guess.
Yeah. But Julia has always said she wanted to see one.
Yeah, I've been, you know, they say that they will communicate. I've read this in some other books, too. They'll communicate with anybody who wants to. So it's a matter of tapping in, and like from that. And when we were at, where was it, ESETI, you know, James Gilliland.
Oregon.
Yeah.
Washington State up there.
You know, yeah. I was communicating. I was getting messages, but I wasn't sure if it was actually them
That's
or not.
When they
so.
Had the sky watch. We were all
right.
Sitting outside looking at the sky.
And they just kept, they were telling me, you know, when I went, and then when we were on that tour with Blair, he was seeing things that I wasn't, and I was asking, can I? And they said, no, it's for him. And I'm just like, but so I'm like, am I really hearing them? But this, it was, so it's very easy to tap into them. You know, they're right there, and they're willing to talk. So.
And they said people will begin to see them more and more now.
Yeah, they're ready. It was like how they said, we are ready to be seen, so those who are ready to see us will. Something like that. So,
Of course, it's going to be the human eye can't pick up.
Well, but see, this is an example. This is what was so fascinating is it's right here in front of us. It's right there, and we don't see it. So what else is right in front of us, and we are not seeing it because we're just not looking and seeing that little bitty thing that makes it, that sets it out, that it really is something different. So.
But a lot of people are always looking for UFOs, just like the craft that we see.
Right.
This one was totally different.
Absolutely.
But we got a caller, but I just wanted to say on our next trips, we're going to be doing the lectures and everything. I'll be speaking at several UFO conferences.
And we'll be showing
And
them.
We're going to be showing the film.
Right.
And I think you're going to put it on YouTube, aren't you?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So everybody else will be able to see this, too. Okay, who's there? Who's got
Hello.
A, you got
Hello.
A question?
Hello.
Hi. Yes?
My name is Sandra.
Hi.
I have a question. I don't know if you have any insight into this, but I have a young man. Well, he's 45 now, but I have known him since he was a baby. And at about the age of 7, he was abducted, and he was gone for quite a long period of time, 2 to 3 days. And he has conscious recollection of this.
Uh-huh.
But so that was then. About 5 months ago, he started hearing voices in his ear. He has tinnitus in his left ear, but he started hearing. About 5 months ago, he woke up. He was sleeping. He woke up, and he saw a being standing over him.
Okay.
The voices began. They all have names. He called me and came over the other night, asked me what he can do because he was in the psych ward. He's had an MRI. He's done all of the medical procedures. And there's
That's
three
a shame to have to go through that.
And so he's looking for a spiritual solution, and I took some notes, asked him some questions. They told him that they were demons. But they all had different names, and I thought that they were more spirits that. Yeah, in discarnate spirits, and he was talking to them while I in the room with me, and I was trying to get different questions. And then I asked him, you know, if they're not of the light, they can't be here. And he said, "Well, Morgan just left. You scared her." And the other two, he's named one Janis Joplin, and the other one. Karen, and by his last name. He said two of them were sisters. Morgan is the only one that can actually leave his body, and the other two are trapped.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Well, it probably is earthbound.
But they're not trapped in his body.
No. Did you say trapped in his body or just trapped, like, what, in this area?
Two of them say that they are trapped in his body. They came after... Morgan said that she was with him in a past life, and then she said that she was lonely, and she brought the other two, which were her daughters, in, and they don't seem to be able to leave at will.
Well, they can't.
But, he said that they're driving him nuts because they all talk at once. He's a carpenter, and they're all measuring at the same time, and they're telling him how to build things, and... He
was
terrible at this point, but he said it's been going on for 5 months.
He ever told him to leave?
I am, that's funny. I'm not so certain. I suggested to him to tell them that they must leave. He said he thinks that they want to leave. And I got a hit that they were discarnate. And when I said that, he lived in Hawaii at one time, and I said, you know, I feel like maybe there was a sudden death. And he jumps, he goes, they're going, yes. We're in a car accident in Kapalua. And he said it was around early 90s, and one of said it was 1993. We were in a car accident. We accidentally jumped in body. But it's just been in the last 5 months that they've been really
But I will say, I will tell you, these are two separate things. Has nothing to do with ETs.
That's what I told him, but that's another story in itself.
Yeah. This is something totally different. And when I've had sessions, we've asked about this. They said, if anything like that is bothering you, all you have to do is tell them to leave. They are not welcome. That you say, I am in the light, I'm in the light. You cannot be here, and they have to leave. But he's the one that has to do it, and he has to really mean it. Because otherwise, they're not allowed. They're not allowed to interfere with anybody's life.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought it was interesting, too, when his mother gave him a white noise machine for Christmas to help him sleep. He said that they hate that machine and that they actually jumped out of the machine and that they were screaming through the machine that it was hurting them. And I just couldn't, I couldn't quite imagine that, but I did mention that if they were not of the light, they couldn't be in my home, and then he said, oh, she just left.
Yeah, that's the truth. They can't. They cannot stay if they're not in the light. And I always tell people to surround themselves with the white light. It's so powerful that nothing negative can even come close to it. It's not allowed.
Yes. I will pass that on to him, because my sense is there's a part of him hanging on to this for some reason.
Oh yeah.
He's created this and invited it, and
for whatever reason,
he's gonna keep it going until he decides that, you know, to let it go.
So. Yeah, because anything like this, we do it ourselves, and it's impossible for them to stay if we don't want them to. And
okay.
But I always tell people to use protection, and apparently he's not doing that.
Well, I mentioned to him that I said, you know how spirits enter is, through alcohol and drugs. And he said, oh, that's what they said, too. They make their own beer.
Well, if you've ever read my book, I don't know how many of my books you've read, Between Death and Life, we talk about the lower astral, the middle astral, and the upper astral. And some of the souls who have died don't know they're dead. They're earthbound. They are in the lower astral. And they don't know they're dead. And so they hang around people. And they are they're particularly attracted to people who drink or on drugs, because that's usually what they had.
Well, I shared that with him. He knows, he knows that he's aware of all of that. I don't think maybe he was aware that he was attracting them, but
He's doing it himself, because otherwise they wouldn't be coming at him. But they're not demons. They're just mixed up spirits that want to go to the light, but he can tell them how to go to the light.
That's
but they
what
can't
he said.
Stay.
One of them, he named Janis Joplin, and they said that they would like to go to the light. So maybe I can help him with that.
Yeah,
well,
you just got to tell them to.
But see, every time when someone dies, there's always somebody there to take them where they're supposed to go. I call it the greeter, and they will. Most people in my session see this person, whoever it is. It can be a relative, it can be a friend, it can be their guide or guardian angel, but they all have somebody who comes and takes them where they're supposed to go. But the ones who are in the lower astral and are more or less earthbound, don't see it, or if they see it, they ignore it because they say, no, I want to stay here. This is what I know. I don't know what's over there. But all they have to do is just look and see there is somebody there to help them and take them where they're supposed to go, and they will take them to the light. So he may have to explain that to them if he really wants them to go.
Right.
Yes, if he really wants them to go. Well, thank you.
But I really don't think he needs MRIs or drugs or none of that, because that's not solving anything.
Well, they gave him schizophrenia drugs that they cost something like $2,000 a month.
Oh,
and all it's doing is messing with his mind further.
He didn't want to take them, so he asked me if I had any suggestions. So.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, but anyway, you talk to him and tell him they can't stay if he doesn't want them to be there.
Okay, I will certainly do that.
That's one of the laws of the universe.
Yes.
We're always in control.
Right.
All right.
Okay,
thank you so much.
A lot, anyway.
Thank you, Sandra.
And I wish you all the best, and your friend, too. Okay, I think we're coming up to the time we're going to have to stop now. But as Julia said, the film that she did, we're probably going to put it on the YouTube,
uh-huh.
and we're going to have you showing it at the conferences.
Right.
Because in April, the 1st of April, I'm going to Istanbul to a World UFO Summit. It's going to be a big one. And I'm going to show it there, and then we'll show it at the UFO conference here in Arkansas the next week after that. And we'll show it at our conference,
mm-hmm.
too, in July. So it'll be interesting to hear the speculation on just what is all of this.
Right.
Okay, but we're still exploring the unknown, and it's exciting, and I don't think we're ever going to find all the answers.
No, and just keep your mind open. What it's telling you is there's more right in front of your eyes than you realize. It's right there, and just look at it a little closer. And you'll probably see something you never imagined would be there.
Yeah, I wonder what else we are just missing.
It's right in front of our eyes. That's the thing.
It's there. There's a lot of things. Probably we're just going through this in a fog and don't have any idea what's there.
Right.
But like you said, they're ready to be seen, and there, mm-hmm. a lot of people are going to be seeing a lot more strange
yes.
things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid of it anyway.
No, not at all.
It's exciting. Okay, well, I think we've come to the end now. We're going to have to go off. Next week, I won't be live. We're going to take our family, and we're going to go on a cruise. We're going to enjoy ourselves, get away from phones, emails, and everything. So before we start in again on our trips. So next week, it'll be an archive show. But thanks, to everybody. Thanks for listening tonight. And everybody have a good evening.
Good evening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.